Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy this show. This is a story about a local boy who made good. I guess you could say that. Local boy who saved millions of people from starving, became president, and then kind of fell from grace. The fact is, and few people know this, the most hated president of the 20th century saved more people from starving to death than anybody else in the history of the world. Ever. This story was first published on May 3rd, 2009. Here we go. In the early days of the Great Depression, Herbert Hoover was the guy that everybody loved to hate. The country was spiraling into a worsening economic disaster, and all he could seem to do was mumble about confidence. As is the case with most such moments in history, there is a substantial amount of unfairness in this. But lately, with the country on uncertain economic grounds, his name has been coming up more and more often. The thing is, there are several things most people don't know about Hoover. The first is that he actually grew up in the Willamette Valley here in Oregon. The second is that he is personally responsible for saving hundreds of millions of people from starving to death. The man actually holds a world record. In fact, he prevented somewhere between 2 and 5 times more deaths than Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, and Pol Pot caused, combined. Hoover's Oregon years started in 1885, when he was 11 and a freshly bereaved orphan. Both his father and his mother died before they were 40. His uncle, John Minthorne of Newburg, offered to take him in, so his relatives bundled him aboard a westbound train and sent him to the Beaver State. The future president was part of a strict Quaker community. As such, as his biography from the Hoover Museum puts it, he was, quote, put to school and the chores. He milked the cow, split wood, and cared for a team of ponies on the Minthorne farm while getting educated at Friends Pacific Academy, which still exists, although it's a college now, George Fox University. When his uncle moved from Newburgh to Salem and started the Oregon Land Company, young Bert came with him and served as an office assistant there. His signature can still be seen on the title deed to the Boston Mill, a historic grist mill on the Kalapuya River near Shedd, which is now a state park. Hoover's time as an Oregonian came to an end after just 6 years, when he moved to Palo Alto, California, to become a member of the first class ever to graduate from Stanford University. There he met his future wife, geology student Lou Henry. He never moved back to Oregon. Instead, he launched a career as a mining engineer, which took him all over the world. In the early 1900s, he and his family actually circled the world 5 times. This, of course, in a time when the best vehicle on offer was a steamship. During World War I, Hoover engineered, launched, and led a program to get food to the starving people of occupied Belgium while keeping it out of the hands of the German soldiers. If the Germans got hold of it, the British Navy would cut off his access and the people would starve. Faced with an alarming increase in glandular tuberculosis brought on by malnutrition, his Committee for Relief in Belgium actually invented a special cookie to feed the children there to get them proper nutrition in the most efficient way possible. This cookie was made with gray wartime flour, cocoa powder, and a little bit of lard. To a well-fed Belgian child today, it would taste like lacquered cardboard, but to that child's great-grandmother in 1917, heavenly. Now, after the U.S. entered the war, Democratic President Woodrow Wilson appointed Republican Hoover as the U.S.'s food administrator, and after the war tapped him to figure out how to feed the starving people of the rest of war-ravaged Europe. The American Relief Administration quickly became the primary source of food for 300 million people in Europe. How many of those people would have starved without Hoover's expertise? How many Belgian children would have wasted away and died without his cookies? The number can't possibly be less than 200 million souls. It's probably much more than that. In his memoirs, Hoover himself put the number at 1.4 billion. Although certainly on the high side, that may be accurate. He was including lives saved in the wake of World War II as well. On a roster of world leaders who have been responsible, directly or indirectly, for thousands or even millions of deaths, it's ironic that one of the U.S. presidents to whom history has been the harshest actually saved millions and millions of innocent people from a lingering and miserable death. Hoover may not have handled the Depression as well as he could have. In fact, he certainly did not. But after learning the whole story of his life, it's hard to be too hard on him for that. And it's interesting to consider something else. Would Hoover have learned what he needed to know if he had not grown up in Newburgh, not gone to George Fox and Stanford, if he'd stayed in Iowa in his father's blacksmith shop? Maybe not. His stony, uncaring reputation to the contrary, Herbert Hoover is a former Oregonian our state can be proud to claim. That's the column, and I've got a personal note to add at the end here. I initially wrote this column after I had discovered the untold Herbert Hoover story and posted it to the internet and forgot about it until 2012. The original contained a couple of factual errors introduced by the source I was working with. In the years since, I found an awful lot of source materials about Hoover that are factually inaccurate. Put simply, the man was a powerful political symbol, and historical coverage tends to be informed largely by whether the author approves or disapproves of what Hoover has come to represent, which ironically is something considerably different from what he actually endorsed in life. If your interest has been piqued and you'd like to find more, I can enthusiastically recommend Martin Fossold, David Hinshaw, and Lee Nash. Hoover's own memoirs are surprisingly fun to read, although not always entirely accurate. If you're up for a more scholarly treatment, Joan Hoff and George Nash are excellent. Should you run across William Leuchtenberg's slim 2009 biographical sketch, can I just tell you that I hate it? It's overtly and shamelessly hostile, it's sketchily and unprofessionally sourced, and it reads like a political hit piece. I have trouble imagining a legitimate scholar is responsible for it, because it is really not a work of scholarship, although it purports to be one. Along the same lines, I suggest not bothering with any of the dozens of presidential series books which you'll find in the usual places in middle school libraries and places like that. You'll find in them the opposite problem from that posed by Leuchtenberg, that is, they most are fawning and uncritical and pass on disputed anecdotes as proven facts. Finally, I should also mention I'm working on my second book, and it's about Hoover's operations in Belgium. I'm going to hold off publishing it, though, until 2014, when the 100-year anniversary of the outbreak of World War I is going to come along, and a variety of scholars of this sort of thing will be putting books out. I want to make sure I'm not duplicating anybody's work. Well, that's our show for today. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch in your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, and a couple other minor components too, YouTube channel, that kind of thing. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is an Atlas String Band track, atlasstringband.com, and it was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon History for the fun of it, and to learn things. So I don't sell advertising, and I don't ask for donations. But if you do enjoy Offbeat Oregon History and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy the show, I can pretty much guarantee that you'll enjoy my book. It's called Wicked Portland. It's published by the History Press in 2012, and you can pick a copy up at a community bookstore near you, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com. The book sells for $20. Finally, if you ever happen to be in Corvallis, drop me a line. We can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or you can tweet at me, @offbeatoregon. Our next show will be coming up at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.